Okay, first of all, welcome. My name is Ben Stanley. I'm a sophomore physics and math major. Today, I'm going to be talking about the relativistic rocket. The way it works is the relativistic rocket is a high-speed rocket with a fixed acceleration. For math's sake, we're going to set it at 1G. We're going to be talking about specifically about three different things. What happens behind the rocket, what happens in front of the rocket, and what happens inside the rocket. So let's meet our players. This is Bob. Bob is the captain of Relativistic Rocket 1. He is told to record everything that happens inside, in front of, and outside the rocket, and just see where he goes. This is Bob's twin sister, Carla. And through a weird communication phenomenon, they can just think to each other, and so we don't have to worry about them communicating back and forth. And this is Relativistic Rocket. It was designed by NASA's biggest and brightest and can travel exactly at the speed of gravity. So the acceleration is fixed at 1G. You would feel the exact same thing in the rocket that you would feel standing on Earth. So first things first, we're going to define a couple of variables. A is the acceleration felt by a relativistic rocket. It is a constant, 1G. Capital T is the proper time inside the spaceship measured by Bob. T prime is the time measured on Earth by Carla. Little d is the distance that the spaceship's covered and the amount of time. V is the they call it the final speed. It's basically the instantaneous speed at any given moment. And gamma factor is the gamma factor we're all used to. So after a long derivation, and I have all the stuff if you want to see it afterwards, it's really, really a pain. You get these five equations fall out. They're pretty difficult, but really they all come down to a simple, they appear complicated, but they come down to a simple meaning. One kind of weird side note, as I'm doing this, I get to the velocity, and proper velocity is defined as a Roddenberry, and I'm like, what is a Roddenberry? I'm trying to figure this out. So I go on Google and I just type in Roddenberry, and like 14 of these pops up, and like Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry's God websites, and all this kind of stuff. So whoever designed this really liked Star Trek because they paid him a big, big homage by giving him the unit of proper velocity is in his name. So I thought it was something weird. So as you plot out the equations, you kind of notice that some weird things start happening. So at 1 year, when Bob's like, oh, I've been traveling for a year, I'm going to check back in with Carla and see what's going on. So he checks in with Carl, and Carl's like, oh, you've been traveling about 1.2 years. Not really a year, but you're close. So he's like, oh, okay, he's still not going relatively fast, 1.77, the speed of light. He's like, okay, well, I'm going to check back in with you in 3 years. Checks back in 3 years, or in 4 years. And Carl's like, what happened? I thought you were going to check in 4 years. He's like, I did. It's now the fifth year on the rocket. I have my calendar right here. Taking the days off. She's like, you've been gone for 84 years. He's like, how is that possible? Checks his speed that he's going basically at the speed of light. So as you can see, while the proper time is increasing really slowly, the time that's on Earth is dramatically increasing. After 12 years, it'll be somewhere around 114,000 years have gone by on Earth. So even if you were to get to the closest star, which is 4.3 years away, 4.3 light years away, in your time it only take you about 3.6 years. Well, in the time fault on Earth, around 60 something years, 65, somewhere around there. Now, Bob says, okay, well, I want to go big. I'm going bigger, I'm going to go home. So I'm going to go to Andromeda, 2 million light years away. Bob does a calculation and says it's going to take him only 28 years. Carla does it and says it's going to take him somewhere in the range of 600,000 years to get there. So as you can see, when you have a constant acceleration and as you approach the speed of light, you'll never technically get there, but as you basically are at the speed of light, the differences in time is tremendous that is felt inside the rocket and out. So now Bob starts thinking, he's been traveling for a while. He goes, okay, I'm going to start figuring out what's going on around me. What is happening? So he first sets his sights on what's happening behind the rocket. So as Bob is passing by, he sees a lighthouse on an asteroid that's blinking. Well, it's got a strobe, it's white light, constant rate. It's like, okay. So he watches it and he's heading towards it. Nothing's changing. He gets this equation that falls out, where this is the distance between the lighthouse and it says the event horizon, which I'll explain. It'll all come out. And then he gets all this junk. Well, as t increases, as the time increases, this whole part eventually just falls out. And what you're left with is negative c squared over a. So he checks behind him at negative c squared over a, and then the negative just denotes that it's behind you and not in front of you. And he sees an event horizon, a wall, whatever you can, you know. Basically, as the time increases, the distance between you and this event horizon will asymptote at negative c squared over a. So he's like, what is going on? What is this? So this is basically what Bob sees. He sees the lighthouse. He starts to pass it. It starts to redshift. It starts to redshift due to the Doppler effect. And it starts to slow down and slow down and slow down before it starts getting really red. And eventually, it'll freeze until it passes this c squared over a distance and it disappears altogether. Bob's freaking out. He's like, something just happened to that lighthouse. I don't know what's going on. So we're going to go back and look at what happens in stages. Before we start, I'll just do a little clarification. Merriam-Webster defines an event horizon as a spatial boundary around a black hole inside which gravity is strong enough to prevent all matter and radiation from escaping. The inability of even light to escape this region is what gives black holes their name. This event horizon, which is called the Rindler horizon, is similar to a black hole, but it's not. It does not suck in matter. All it is it's a point at which light from behind it can no longer reach your accelerating rocket. So, time very small, you're just passing the lighthouse, everything's good, light's the same. As you get farther and farther away from it, the light starts to redshift and slow down. The blinking becomes slower and slower until eventually anything from behind this Rindler horizon, and that's just kind of what it looks like if you could see it kind of thing, anything from behind that will never reach you, regardless of how fast, even the speed of light, it will never reach you. And that's just kind of weird. How would you communicate with somebody? We always talk about using fiber optics or light communication, things like that. Well, this shows that if you get fast enough and you have a constant acceleration, light communication is no longer possible. You are going to have to figure something else out. One other strange thing that's noticed is Carl is standing on Earth and sees Bob go by. He says, oh, I've got this Rindler horizon following me. She says, no, you don't. Non-accelerating frame, nothing happens. Second, Bob kicks off his acceleration and becomes constant speed, goes away, light catches back up, everything's normal. So it's just a really weird phenomenon that happens when you start accelerating. It just shows the differences between constant velocity and the new kinks and systems that happen when you start getting acceleration. Bob goes, okay, well, that's weird. I gotta figure out what's happening in front of me now. I gotta make sure I'm not about to hit something. So as he goes through, as he's traveling, the sensors on his ship start telling him that there's heat. He's like, I'm in the middle of space. There's nothing here. Why am I getting heat? So he does the calculations and he gets this formula. When you plug in everything, the H bar, C and K are all stuff we're used to, you get around 256 Kelvin. So not very hot, but it's still there. He's like, why am I getting heat from this? What's going on? So one interesting thing to look at is empty space is normally perceived as being a vacuum void of energy. But really it's not. All it is energy in its lowest form. While it's really low and it's about as far as you can get, it's still there. And per cubic meter of space, you have around 300 individual hydrogen atoms. You have photons, cosmic dust, background radiation from the Big Bang. You have all types of energy, but they're just in their lowest form. But when you're traveling through it, you know, close enough to the speed of light, and you're accelerating through stuff, it's hitting and it's piling up on your front of your ship, and it's dissipating in the form of heat. So Bob's actually getting a heat reading from just having an acceleration. The second you kick off the acceleration, heat goes away, just like the Rennler horizon. So he's like, this is just, you know, this is weird. I gotta figure out what's going on inside. Am I gonna burst into flames? Am I gonna disappear? Am I not gonna be able to see my feet? What's going on inside the rocket? So inside the rocket, he notices that the clocks at the front of his ship are moving faster than the ones at the back. To him, that's just insane. He's like, how is this possible? They can't be moving faster. So he talks to Carl, and he does a little bit of thinking about it, and he's actually right. They are moving faster in the front than they are in the back. Through Einstein's equivalence principle, an experiment done in a real gravitational field provided that the experiment has a fairly small spatial extent, doesn't take very long, we get a result indistinguishable from the same experiment done in the accelerating time. Basically what that's saying is, if you have the same acceleration in this rocket that you would have on Earth, Earth should have the exact same phenomena. Clocks in a big tower should be moving faster up top than they are on the bottom. Well, actually, this is true, and it's been proven from the Mossbauer effect. The Mossbauer effect was tested by Pound and Rebka, Harvard's East Tower, in 1959. Uses kind of the same principle as GPS positioning systems. Essentially, what it is you take an atom, you take two atoms of the same kind, you put one at the bottom, you have a long tube, and you have one at the top. When an atom is in an excited state, it transmits from that excited state into a photon with a specific frequency and energy. What it does is when it transmits it, it'll follow up the tube. What you would think is if you have the same atom and it comes in with the same frequency and same energy, it'll be absorbed by this atom of the same kind up top. But what Bob notices at the front of the ship, when he sends the photon up, it doesn't get absorbed. It just goes right past. Well, it must have a different energy, and it must have a different frequency. So what he does the calculations, and he actually gets that due to a red shift from the acceleration, or a blue shift, depending on which way you're going, the energy and the frequency are different inside inside the photon, so they're no longer absorbed by the second atom. So, in effect, clocks are moving faster at your head than at your feet. While it's small, they are moving. So, what's the implications of this? Space travel is hard. When you have space travel and things like that, there are a lot of different things that come into play when you start talking about acceleration. You know, how am I going to communicate with Earth? What am I going to do? What is the difference between, you know, if I discover something that's 20 years, takes me 20 years to find, that's around 500,000 years on Earth time, there's going to be no one to share it with. You know, there might not be anyone left. It might just be me in my rocket. Also, what do you do with all the heat that's building up on your rocket? And how are you going to deal with the differences and effects that the front of your ship feels and the back of your ship? So it just shows how, you know, these are some of the problems that scientists are trying to deal with. And sci-fi movies kind of give it a glimpse into, you know, oh, once we get close to speed of light, we're off, we're good, and we just jump around wherever we want, and everything's great. No, it's a little bit harder than that. So now I'll open it up to anyone who has questions. Feel free to answer them. I just want to hear my references. I really want to say a special thanks to Dr. Scalise, because you really helped me get through all the math, because it was pretty hard. So,
okay.
Any questions?
All right. Let's thank Dennis. Okay, we've got time for a few questions, with preference given to people in the class, because it counts as part of your grade to ask questions. A gentle reminder from your faculty member.
So you said that the it's going to be red shift or blue shift, depending on which way you're going. Should it always be red shift in the back and then blue shift in the front?
If you place the atom at the front of your ship and shot the photons on the back, it would be different than if you placed it in the back and shot it forward.
Jason, there was a question from Jason South.
Because of the horizon that takes place whenever you're moving forward and you can't see anything behind you, does that have anything to do with the Schwarzschild radius, where there's a certain limit where you can collapse matter to create a black hole? So are we kind of dealing with that also?
I have no idea, honestly. I'm not even going to attempt because I have no idea. The interesting thing about the rim of the horizon is its properties about how it forms, and it's not a black hole. Like nothing happens once you pass it. All you see is it redshifts and it slows down. And once you get past that point, it's called a horizon just because it's easier to think of it like something following you, but it's really not. It's just a point at which light will no longer reach you. So at that, it's not, you would see kind of a black wall following you, mm-hmm. where everything's disappearing behind it, but it's not a technical event horizon, because right. It's not a black hole, because it's not observed by somebody who's not accelerating. So if you're moving at constant speed, you would not see it. You had to be accelerating, and once you get accelerated, that's when it forms.
Okay, so continuing the discussion on the horizon. So is this kind of black hole, is it kind of like a dome behind you? I mean, is there a point that like stuff at an angle that's coming in?
It's the way that I perceive it as is you have a ship and behind it just is a flat line. It's not it's not a hole. It doesn't have an angle to it. It just looks like if you can imagine a flat wall coming at you, like you're standing here and this wall just approaches you. That's what it looks like. There's no way for somebody to actually test this. This is all theoretical, but theoretically, that's what it looks like. It just passes you, and no matter where you look, any light at that point will not reach you. Mm-hmm. So,
would it be possible to test it by looking to see if you can still see stars at well-defined distances behind you once you start accelerating? Would that be enough to test? Would stars start to disappear across the event horizon?
Yeah, because the way that it says is anything that passes this point, light will no longer be able to reach you. So, but one of the things that you have to worry about is the reason I use the lighthouse is because it was a stationary object that was emitting light at a constant rate, and we could tell where the light already was. There will be times when you're moving and you will be catching up to more light than you would originally be moving. There are points where you will be surpassing things that if the Earth is, the universe is expanding, and because of that, it has an acceleration. And from that point, you will be able to see as the rocket's moving, there will be the event horizon, and things that pass that point will no longer be able to be seen. But once you get to that point, anything before it, you're good.
So you could wind up losing the ability to navigate using stars behind you?
Yes.
And then you might see new stars in front of you.
That you've never seen because you're catching up to the light before it actually reached.
Yeah.
And I guess you mentioned at the, towards the end of that part, once you get to a constant velocity, or I guess you decelerate, so does the light all of a sudden just catch up in a flash? Or do you know?
That was one of the things that, in a lot of different sources, it was kind of, that was something I kind of chose to left out because there's no clear, concise.
Yeah,
most of the places that I looked at had all this information. It was all basically uniform. But when they started talking about second you deaccelerate, some people thought it would jump back in a flash, kind of like a picture. Some people thought that it faded back in. It was, I just chose to leave it off because there was no clear, concise theory on what exactly happened. Different people had different ideas, and it was hard to tell who was right and who was wrong.
Yeah.
As far as the temperature
last question.
Because you said you heat up as you, or you'll give off radiation.
Yeah.
As you start. Is there a, do you know how that temperature is produced, if it's an exponential or how it's done? Or is it just a linear type?
Okay,
so yeah.
Your acceleration here is constant, so the heat you'll feel is going to be constant regardless of where you are and how long you've been moving.
Okay, so that's the acceleration from your frame.
Yes, that's the acceleration that you feel. So in our analogy of the rocket, it's 1G. So this is the 256 Kelvin is what falls out of there. And it's not a, when I was originally doing this, places were telling me that it was hot, it was really hot depending on what your acceleration was. But we did the math and the practice talk, and it's not hot at all, but it's still there. I mean, it's hot enough to make a difference on space being empty. And that was kind of the point I was trying to drive home is, you know, space isn't empty, it's not a vacuum, it's just things in their lowest energy states.
Okay, well, let's thank Dennis one more time.